Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com.
Trying to choose the right supplements for the right horses often feels like a chore, and you have enough chores as it is. Fortunately, there's Equithrive, whose mission is to make this whole nutrition equation easier on you and much more beneficial to your horses. Equithrive's lineup of pelleted supplements are developed with care, backed by science, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. Not to mention picky eater approved. Whether you need advanced joint care for your equine athlete, gut or metabolic support, Equithrive is your one-stop shop for feed tub fortification. Do your horses and yourself a favor and visit equithrive.com. Use the promo code HumbleHoof and get 20% off your first order, plus free and fast shipping nationwide. Don't forget to use HumbleHoof, all one word, to get 20% off your first order at equithrive.com.
A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 20% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and the TPU upper design allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 20% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. Kendra Skorstad has been a Facebook friend of mine for a while, and she was even on the podcast before about burnout. I have been chatting with her on Facebook about a handful of different things when it comes to hoof rehab. And something that she and I discussed recently was the ethics of rehabbing these lame horses with owners that want to work them or keep them in work. This is something that I struggle with a lot and something that I feel that I need to advocate for the horse over anything else. Kendra and I decided to take our conversation to the podcast, and while there's no real questions and it's very off the cuff and a free-flowing conversation that's pretty candid, I hope that it brings up some considerations for both owners and hoof care providers when it comes to working on horses that have compromised feet or lameness issues. Well, thank you so much for being willing to chat with me today. I know, so a little context for listeners, since this is going to be a little bit of a spitball episode. Kendra and I were chatting on Messenger, and something that both of us, I think, struggle with, I know I struggle with, is coming to a horse. You know, you get called into a case that's a rehab case, whether they're lame or they just have very poor hooves or imbalanced feet or chronic hoof pathology or distortion with or without lameness. And, you know, we have owners that obviously want to improve their horses, but they own this animal that they have a desire to use and ride. And horses are expensive to own, and they're a very expensive pet. So, you know, we're kind of chatting about the ethical dilemma of the owners wanting to keep these horses in work and the hoof care provider having the responsibility of, you know, getting these horses comfortable and sound and improving their feet, and where we kind of draw the line with that. So thank you so much for being willing to chat on such a big topic so last minute.
Oh, sure. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So, I mean, first off, like, do you, like, how often would you say you come to these cases where the owner's just like, what can I do to get back on my horse? Like, is this common for you?
Yeah, I see it a fair bit because I do a lot of performance horse work. And so when we have new horses come into programs, you know, it's a little bit like, here's this horse that we bought and it's going and doing all these things. And they show me the radiographs and I see the horse and the feet aren't great. And they're like, well, we have to keep riding. And we need to keep showing. And we have a show next weekend. And so, yes, this is a topic that comes up pretty often. Because they also really want these horses to be happy and healthy by their definition of what that is. And whatever I can do to help them, but also make sure they keep showing.
Yeah, right. I know. And that's honestly something that I've always struggled with the performance horse world in Horses on My Books is it's hard because you understand that that horse has a job and they are expected to perform. But also I want to make sure that the horse, like I'm standing up for the horse. Yeah. And that's something that I really struggle with. So do you have a sort of protocol when you come to a new client and you're like, whoa, these feet need rehab? Like, do you have a way that you talk to the owner about that?
Yeah, I start with documenting everything. I gather, you know, whatever radiographs are available and hopefully they're current. If they're not current, I ask for new ones. I take photos of everything. And if I need to, I mark them up just so we can establish a baseline. And it gives me something to be able to communicate to the owners with about in terms of like how severe a hoof morphology might be, right? Like, are the heels actually sitting on the ground or do we have some clearance, you know, just for an example. And I can talk to them a little bit about, you know, the limits of what I can do at each visit and talk to them about what their goals are and how can we find hopefully a middle ground. Because I find that I've been really lucky with some really amazing programs and wonderful people that we can give them that space to be able to make some changes to help improve as much as we can with the feet, as long as it doesn't degrade or detract from performance. If it's going to, we tend to have a conversation so that we can find a period of time maybe when the horse, you know, doesn't need to be showing and might have a little bit lighter workload. People are going on vacation or it's holiday or who knows, that we could maybe make some more improvements and make changes then. And so I try to talk to them about what their plans are in the immediate future and then a little bit further down the road and explain to them the limits of what I can do, what I think I can accomplish. And then also, if we're not able to maybe hit those goals that I have for the feet within so many cycles, you know, what do we need to do to pivot? And maybe it's not even something that I need to do. Maybe it's something with the riding. Maybe it's something with the body. Maybe it's something with, you know, how the horse is using itself that's causing the feet to not come around the way that I would like for them to. And we try to have those conversations so that we can all be doing our part as best as we can to get the feet to come around so these horses can actually stay sounder and work better.
Yeah. And so that was another one of my questions that I'm thinking of right now is just like how many of these horses that you're coming to are typically sound, like the ones that you're having these conversations with, they're typically sound, but they just have not the best hoof quality. Is that, or are you coming to horses that are lame and the owner's just like, well, what can I do to get this horse sound enough to show next week? Are you seeing both?
I see both. And I would say that, and this has come up recently in other conversations that I've had, is how do we define lameness? What is considered lame? And I would say for the vast majority of people, a lame horse is a head bobbing horse. But if the horse isn't head bobbing, it's not lame to them. But that doesn't mean that there aren't compensation patterns or that a horse isn't using himself well or that there isn't a problem. But it's still serviceable. It's still doing the job. And so I think that that starts to get really tricky.
Yeah.
Careful wording is always important. And mindfulness, right? Like they've usually spent a lot of money on these horses. And then to be told like, well, it's not moving right and its feet are a mess and you should just let it sit for 3 months so we can help it is not typically what they want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I think that's what I struggle with the most too, is that, you know, horses that are not moving properly, they could be headed towards an injury or a lameness that then is going to be a like, whoa, we need to stop riding for like 6 to 12 months because there's a soft tissue injury because we didn't address the biomechanics 6 to 12 months ago. Right. And that's something that I struggle with a lot is that, you know, people are like, oh yeah, they're so sound. They feel so good. And I think there's like two ways of that, right? So there's one that's like, maybe this horse is actually like seemingly comfortable because they're just compensating and they're strong enough at that point to handle all of these issues in their body. But then the other direction is like, how many of these horses are lame in more than one foot so they don't feel asymmetrical or they don't right. look asymmetrical? And how many owners, or even me, like how many of us are able to pinpoint if a horse is lame in more than one foot, you know, if there's an issue? So, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to stop you.
No, I think, you know, I have this really extreme and crazy story. I worked for a potential, or worked for a person that, I'm trying to be mindful here for privacy's sake. So I worked for a person that was, you know, thinking Olympics, right? And so we're talking upper level dressage horse, and shoeing schedules were very tight. Vet visits were very tight. Everything was very organized. It was a well-run program. And I think the biggest complaint was like the toes needed to be shorter. The toes needed to be shorter. I can tell you that radiographically and like palpation of the sole, there was literally no room to take toes any shorter, to take feet back any further. Mm-hmm. But because the horses were managed so well and they were so fit and the environment was so pristine, that right after we would shoe those horses would move the best that they would ever move. But it only lasted 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then at 2 weeks, the horses would start to degrade again. And it took me a couple of cycles to like piece it together. First off, you're pushing the very, very limits of trimming and, you know, seeing blood and not seeing blood. And I should have picked up on it sooner, but like, hey, takes you a minute, right? Mm-hmm. But when you trim a horse too short, it takes how long for a horse to start to feel better?
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Right.
2 weeks where they have enough foot that like they're not foot sore. And between trying to get shoes on the horse, and right, some horses aren't always easy to get shoes on. Some horses, you know, are reactive to nailing, which may or may not have bigger implications. But when you started to look at the bigger picture for this particular horse, she hated nailing. She didn't want to stand still. Like all the signs were there. Everything was there saying that like her feet hurt. And I believe that like she was strong enough and talented enough that she could compensate for the fact that both front feet were trimmed excruciatingly short. And that's why her movement improved so much, because she was actually foot sore.
Yeah.
And bilaterally, but she didn't have a head nod.
Right.
And it just got missed. And because she was talented and she could sit back and get off her front end, it like never caused a bigger issue that we saw from a different light. And that's an extreme example. That's one horse in thousands. But my point is that even at upper levels, we miss, right? Bilateral lameness. We miss things because it's not overtly obvious.
Yeah. Having a hoof rehab facility, one main focus of ours is forage. I want the horses here to have safe, tested forage available 24/7 without the risk of becoming obese. I've spent years looking for the ideal slow feeder for us, and we have found it with Hay Boss feeders. When I tell you that my Hay Boss XL feeder has cut my feeding time by 90%, I mean it, and it might even be an understatement. The covered feeders with integrated slow feed nets allow for all my horses here to have access to hay all the time, which is healthy for their guts and minds. They're also not able to completely binge all at once because the nets keep them in check. They're available all over North America right now. But side note, if you're in New England, I got mine from Mountain Lane Farm, who delivered it right to me and showed us how to set it up and use it. We can't imagine our lives without it here. Yeah, and so in those, so I think I'm not the most confrontational person. I struggle a lot with these conversations, especially when it's kind of giving bad news or not such good news to an owner. Or the hard part is like, we're not vets. We're not, you know, diagnosing anything. We're not trying to, you know, take over that part of their care, but it is our responsibility to point out if we're seeing issues in the feet. So how do you kind of approach those conversations with owners? Like if you're seeing an asymmetry or not, if you're just seeing that the horse isn't moving appropriately, like do you have those conversations or do you just kind of formulate a plan and work to improve the feat in your own way? Like what do you do with those?
Oh man, I'm with you. I really hate her conversations.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Cause like they can get so emotional so fast. So I really like that's step one. I try to like have it not be emotional, right? I meet them with like logic and facts. I show them the data, you know, I try to keep it less about an attack, you know, like having it feel that way and be perceived that way. I think practice, Alicia, is the thing, yeah. Right? It's trying to figure out where each person is coming from, right? Because it's different for all of them. Maybe it's that person's, you know, last horse that they're ever going to own and they just want to be able to get to this one show, you know, or, you know, somebody else. It's like, I put all my savings into this. This has got to work, you know, and I feel like the conversations are different and I try to listen to what they're telling me and try to present information that they can hear, that they can access, that makes sense to them, that not that I try to like Pollyanna it, but make it not sound so dire, you know, but also be honest and realistic about the situation. If the horse continues to have a negative palmar angle and a broke back hoof pastern axis, your risk of injury is exponentially greater. And if your horse has already had an injury like that, we like critically have to fix this now, you know? And so I always try to be upfront with people, even though it's hard. And I swear, I feel like I have to swallow my stomach sometimes.
Yeah.
To say it because you have to. I don't know. I do. I don't know. It'll eat me if I don't. And so I usually try to find a way to have that conversation with people and meet them where they're at and see if, like, could we find a middle ground? Okay, so maybe we can't do it entirely your way. Can we find this middle ground that works for the horse, that works for you, that starts us going in the right direction? As long as we all understand the risks. And I think that's a big piece of it is that I have to at least share with you my experience and what I've seen and the risks that are involved if we prolong this. And then I have to be okay with the decision that they make.
Right. Yeah. And I think too, like, I feel like I'm going to be super vulnerable here in terms of my own practice, but something that I feel like I've shied away so much from the performance horse world or even honestly, I've shied away so much from shoeing because I feel like owners will often ask like, hey, I have this lame horse. What can you do to fix it? So that I can do X, Y, and Z. Whereas like in my gut, I feel like I don't want to have this horse working. You know, like I that doesn't sit well with me because in my opinion, I don't want to be a part of this if I feel like it's going to lead to issues in the future. But I say that like I don't want to offend anybody who does shoe and gets, you know, shoes a horse and that horse is sound instantly because I think that that takes amazing skill to be able to pick up a foot that has a problem, the horse is not sound, to do something to it in like an hour's time and then have that horse instantly comfortable and able to perform when it couldn't before. And that is something that is like incredible to me because that obviously takes an incredible amount of skill. And so I don't want my previous statement to sound like, I feel like I've only said that to a few people and I'm going to just say it on my podcast because I don't want people to take that as like, oh, she like hates people that shoe to get these horses to work because I know that that's a skill that is not easy to attain. I guess that something that I struggle with is like, if I really feel like the best thing for this horse to get it to perform for the next 10 years is for it to have time off I don't want to do the quick thing if it's going to give them a career of another year as opposed to another X amount of years. Does that make sense? Like, do you struggle with that at all? Or do you stuff to the feet and then they're able to heal and continue to work?
I think it's a super fun question. So I totally hear where you're coming from. And when I'm talking about shoeing and I'm talking about everything that we're talking about, when I'm shoeing these horses, I am always trying to build a better foot. Always.
Yeah.
How we get there, how fast we get there might be different. There are few situations where that won't work because the horse needs to be able to perform better. It happens. They're there. And those are the conversations where, let's just say, for example, the horse needs some help with shock absorption for whatever reason. The foot's not quite healthy, but having a pad with packing is, you know, diminishing his performance and what they want to be able to do in terms of ribbons, right? So the only answer to help that horse stay comfortable and get through a show as a rim pad. Alicia, I hate rim pads. Like, I think that they're the worst. And I think that they were probably developed as a means to an end. Like, get this horse through this thing. Mm-hmm. And I can count the number of times on one hand I've ever done it on purpose to get a show or get a horse through a show. But we all understood that as soon as that horse came home, it was coming immediately back out of those pads and going back into what it needs to be in. So it was a very temporary fix. And so I would not have felt comfortable, and this is where communication and teamwork, I think, is really important. I would not have felt comfortable if they were like, well, hey, it's working. Let's just squeeze a few more shows out for the rest of the season. I wouldn't be comfortable with that, and I wouldn't have agreed to do something like that. And I'm fortunate. I'm at a place in my career where I can say that does not sit well with me. I am not going to be party to just getting you through the next season of shows and then we'll deal with it later, because I genuinely care about your horse and I want what's best for your horse. Like, I believe you do too. And I won't do this. I'm not willing to do this for your horse. And so I feel like being really honest with people and trying to build that common ground that, like, hey, we both really love horses and we both really want what's best for the horse. Here's how we can do this. But I would say that in general, I am able to improve feet with shoeing. And because I work with a pretty large number of horses that are, we're going to say sound, right? Nobody's head bobbing lame. You know, maybe movement isn't perfect, but for the job they have, they are sound for all intents and purposes. But hoof morphology isn't great. Heels are bad or whatever. I would say that I have a really high success rate of rehabbing feet. And so for me, it's about my intention. So I can keep horses going because going well and better, actually, because I can keep them comfortable and I can improve the quality of the hoof, from everywhere from wall structure to improving mass in the heels to improving, you know, the digital cushion and the frog, all of it, and the parameters for basic support around center of rotation. I can do that in shoes. And then actually it was really fun is we do get them better. And then some of them, we pull their shoes off and then they can go barefoot.
Yeah.
But if we would have just tried to get them barefoot first and then rehab them barefoot and keep them going, that doesn't seem to always work out very well. Those horses would have probably needed time off while we let their feet rehab. And we have those, right. For whatever reason, maybe they're in off of an injury or something, and we'll go ahead and pull shoes on feet that aren't perfect, depending on the degree of problems that we're having. And, go ahead and pull the shoes and rehab them without shoes. But those are, I think, are special circumstances. That's not the norm for me. The norm for me is to be able to improve the hoof quality significantly with shoes and keep them working.
Yeah. And I will say, it's like a whole nother topic, but I think that the healthiest feet that I have are horses that are in work. And it could be, I mean, part of it could be that, you know, they're moving so much more than the horses off property that I see that are just standing around all the time. They're retired. Their whole life is cushy. They don't have to utilize their body in any which way. And then, you know, their feet are kind of like junky, you know? And then the horses that I have that are like, oh my goodness, we ride, you know, we'll trail ride for 3 hours on a Saturday and then we'll do ring work for an hour on a Monday. And then, you know, they're like cross training and doing all this stuff. Like they have consistently better feet. And so I think there's something to it too, that, you know, as long as a horse is sound, I'm never for advocating for riding a lame horse or working a lame horse, that those horses typically have better feet if we are working to, I guess, I don't even know how to say this. Like, obviously we all know horses that are in work that have terrible feet. And part of that's, you know, diet, part of that's like cycle length, part of that is farriery and what's going on their feet and how the hoof care provider is looking at their feet. But as long as we're, you know, all looking for those same things that you mentioned, like, you know, making sure that they have healthy angles and giving them as much mass as you can, you know, those are going to be the feet that are going to be healthier on horses that I trim. I don't know if you've seen that too. I don't know if do you work mostly on performance horses? Do you have any to compare to ones that aren't in work in terms of hoof health?
Yeah, I've got a good handful that are not performance horses. And I think I see a little bit of all of it. I have a handful of like eventers that like towards the end of the season, after they've been, you know, working all season and, you know, doing dressage and doing their stadium jumping and running cross country, you know, that despite what we do, I do feel like sometimes the feet really do pay a price, even though those horses are sound. You know, I do find that sometimes those things struggle towards the end of seasons. I've had horses that aren't maybe 100%, but like they've got enough going on and there's enough physical tension and mental tension that like the feet just aren't like, they're not bad, but they're not as good as you feel like that they could be. Right.
Yeah.
And then something changes and, you know, maybe someone's out of town for a couple of weeks or they decide to retire the horse and the horse is now just doing nothing and it's hanging out in the pasture or their dry lot. And all of a sudden the feet are just so much better. Yeah. You know, I think all that tension leaves their body and they decompress with all that stress. And while their problems aren't resolved, I do think that it plays a role in how well the feet grow. So I feel like I see all of it. I don't think that I could say that there's any one box that they all fit into, but I agree. If like generally, if they've got good, healthy bodies and minds and feet, that horses that are working look way better.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess my point of bringing that up is like, you know, if we can keep a horse moving well and in work, I could totally see your point of you're getting these feet to rehab still, you know, like they're able to rehab because you're being mindful of what you're doing to their feet, but also because maybe they're able to work through their, you know, improve their body issues through proper training or any, whatever. And that's something like the whole body issue stuff. That's something that I would love to learn more about, know more about. And that's something that I know is so, so important. And I just haven't explored as much in terms of, you know, straightness training, thoracic sling work. And it's stuff that I've worked with others to do, but I haven't, you know, kind of jumped on it to do it myself. Yeah. Sorry. That was a tangent.
No, but I think it's all related. And I've definitely seen, so right, we all have our different ways of doing things. And I would say that in general, I wouldn't even call it a method. I feel very strongly about the word method when it comes to trimming, because I feel like all of them work sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, but the way that I approach feet, my method, my thought process, I'm using method loosely here. I usually get feet to turn around. And have better parameters on all fronts. And if they're not, that's information about, to me, about stuff that's going on in the body. Either that's how they're working or how they're using themselves or their posture, which I think is super fun because then I can talk to my clients and be like, okay, hey, so I usually have success doing this and hey, it's just really slow and it's just not coming around. I think that if we looked into a couple other things in the body, we might, you know, be able to explore that and see if we can help the hooves further. And I've been so, it's not surprising, but it's so fun when they do that and then they come back and tell me, oh yeah, we found X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And then they address those things and then the feet start getting better. I had one horse that was high, low foot was really low. And then the horse was over at the knee and the owner always had focused on that limb. But when I started the horse, the way that I set it up, the foot started to come around and the horse was not, as over at the knee as it had been. It was doing better. And I would say, I don't know, 4 or 5 months in, it totally flatlined and started going backwards. And so I did wedge that foot because it was so low Palmer angle. And everyone's like, oh my God, it's the wedge. The wedge is causing this. I'm like, the wedge isn't causing this. I wedge horses all the time without problem. Something else is going on with this horse. And it wasn't long before they discovered that there was a suspensory tear in the diagonal hind.
Oh, wow.
So to me, I was like, well, that was really cool. I mean, it's not cool the horse got hurt, right? But it was information. The thing that usually works and I find success with started to and then didn't. And I had said, hey, we've plateaued. I think there's something going on, but the horse wasn't lame yet. And then it got the injury, which was fascinating. You know, I had another horse that, oh man, I struggle to get his feet to look the way I want. It's the horse that nobody is ever going to be able to make Instagram worthy. Cause
yeah, we all have those,
just, you know, it's just like the feet are just not the thing that look good. And we kind of chased this rabbit for a while. Like, why can't we get it to come around? I mean, I have marked up his feet. I have mapped up his feet. I have pushed every millimeter in every dimension to get his feet to fit, to get his feet right. And couldn't. And this horse always had a super parked out posture. And I always found that really odd. And finally, I don't know how long it was into this after chasing. I don't know how many rabbits to try to figure out what was going on. I finally said, I think that there is another reason why the feet aren't coming around and he's standing parked out. And I've seen other horses do this. I think you need to look at the back. And they took back x-rays and they found kissing spine.
Wow.
You know, so to me, when I feel like I have a process that works the vast majority of the time, when it's working and then things go backwards or when it's not working, it's information that I get to share with people about, hey, like the feet, they belong to horses and those horses' bodies impact how the feet grow. And it gives us talking points for them to be able to explore other things in the body to see if we can't also, you know, help the feet and, you know, investigate causes higher up.
Yeah. I mean, the feet don't live in isolation. Absolutely.
Nope, they don't.
Yeah. And honestly, like this is, again, a little off topic, but along that same vein, like one of my not favorite things to be right about, because I never want to be right about something that's wrong with a horse. Yeah. But when I pick up a foot and I'm like, this horse has PPID, like not even a founder foot, not even a no rotation, no laminitis. But if a foot is not responding, and, you know, all like you're saying, you do all the typical things. I was just like, this is a metabolic foot. This is not growing the way that I think it should grow. And when I come back in 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever, it does not look the way that it should look in 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever. And the amount of times that it's come back as positive is like kind of, it's sad because you don't want to be right about something like that. But, you know, we, like you're saying, we look at so many feet and we see things and how they turn out. And obviously every horse is an individual, but we start to pick up on patterns, you know? So yeah, absolutely.
I think I think you saying that brings me back to like the earlier topic of like farriers get pigeonholed into we work from the hairline down. We just do the feet. We show up. In some cases, nobody knows we're there. We just do the feet and we leave and then they continue riding and like life is hunky dory, but God forbid the horse takes an offset. It has to be the farrier's fault. And I think that we probably see outside of the owners or the caretakers horses more often than any other professional. And we pick up so many legs. We feel so many bodies. And while we may not be body workers, we may be not be Olympic level riders, we absolutely have a database of what things feel like when we pick a leg up, when we, you know, ask for the horse to shift its weight and how it responds. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we could help horse owners understand what a wealth of information we can be, we don't have all the answers, but we can provide you with information that might be really helpful. I actually just had this happen. A horse I was trimming, he's a quarter horse. He can be a little bit stiff on occasion, but this day he was ridiculously stiff behind, like abnormally stiff. And the owner was there and he was struggling. He was actually like, the limb was trembling just a little tiny bit. I was like, and he wasn't lame, by the way, and he was totally fine in every other regard. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but this feels like this. I would keep an eye on him. And within 24 hours, his legs had swelled and wow. He developed a fever and had anaplasmosis.
Oh, wow.
And so I do. I think that we're like these little boxes of information. And it would be really cool if owners would be willing to listen. Not to say that we have all the answers, but sometimes we can provide context. Sometimes we can provide additional information about how something feels that could be helpful for them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I feel like we could do like a whole roundtable podcast episode of like, what are some things that you notice in horses? You know, like even there's been a few times, probably more than a few times that I've like, you know, we run our hands down horses' legs all day long. And I've found soft tissue injuries that the owner had no idea about because I run my hand on the leg and I'm like, oh, have they always had this swelling here? And they're like, what swelling? You know, it's like, well, this isn't a normal suspensory area, you know, like you're, so.
That scratches. I get scratches a lot. Like, hey, I think you've got a little scratches here. Oh, we didn't notice. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're just, you know, that's all we do. I mean, my eyes are like on the distal limb all day long. So yeah, I totally get that. Yeah. And I mean, I know we kind of like veered off the topic a little bit. but in terms of, I mean, obviously I feel like we could talk forever, but something that kind of like round out the conversation and I mean, kind of bring it to a full circle is like, you know, if we're talking about the ethical implications of getting these horses back in work and rehabbing feet while they're in work or on rest, you know, what are some things that we can do to kind of like push the industry to consider that and also, you know, kind of think about the horses first? Like, have you kind of thought about that in terms of this topic?
I think about this all the time. Because I actually believe the power is in the hands of the horse owners, right?
Yeah.
They're the ones that pay the professionals. They're the ones that have the horses. And, you know, how do we advocate so we can have better hoof care? And how do we get the team on board for the horse? And so to me, it's one, finding common ground. We all are doing our best for the horse. And then I think we need to have an ethical framework in place where we identify what the problems are. We identify what the ethical issues are around trying to solve those problems and determine the scope with which we can explore ways to improve the feet and what works in different types of environments, different programs, and come up with options for resolution. Because I don't think that there's a single road to Rome. There's many, you know, and how we get there, I think, is going to look different for everybody. But I think it does require having a team approach that is horse centric, not finances, not the show, not the other things that don't matter. Like, the horse should get the final say. And I don't think soundness is the only metric we should be looking at. I think that every time we can get the horses to have a positive, neutral posture and positive hoof morphology sets that horse up for success, reduces chances of injury, which I think is actually what everybody would like to have, is not have their horses break down, you know. And so we can never have a crystal ball to say you'll never have an injury if your horse fits into the ideal model. That's not realistic. But I think that the chances of injury go way down when we can take all of the factors into consideration and work towards having a better hoof capsule that is supportive for that limb on that horse as much as possible.
Yeah. And I think one thing you mentioned for sure, like the hoof morphology, I think that's a good way for farriers and owners to keep track of, like, yes, this horse is sound or this horse is going better, but is this good long-term? Like, how are we monitoring what the feet are doing?
Right. And that's like a whole nother podcast, you know, but for me, it's taking photos, marking them up so that I can provide people with data points and just a way to track changes. Like, did what I do work for that horse? Yes or no? And okay, cool. So that's information. How do we work from there? How do we help it? Because yes, that horse may be sound, but the feet may be terrible. And this, to me, also sidebar rabbit hole, is that it's really hard because horses don't just immediately break if they have a negative palmar angle.
Yeah.
They don't. They're so good at adapting, and they've got such an incredible adaptive capacity that they're really good at hiding it. They're really good at continuing to do the thing that we ask for them to do because they're incredible, right? You know, and I don't know. I feel like, yeah, that's like a whole nother rabbit hole. But soundness, I think, is a huge deal. But I really believe that having a foot that is set up for that limb, that is as close to neutral as possible for that limb, right? Because neutral is defined by a lot of different things, and we have our ideal frameworks, but like, it is different for every horse. And I think trying to get the horse to that, to use their body as efficiently as possible, to have less stress and strain on the soft tissue, to make it easy for them to do the thing that they do, is more important than the immediate, but the horse is sound and going.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. I mean, like you said, I feel like we could, there's so much to discuss on this topic, and I feel like we could talk forever. But I know we're approaching like the, you know, 40 minute mark or whatever. So I want to be mindful of the time too. And thank you so much for being willing to chat about this. And hopefully it opens up more of a conversation and just more of a consideration for owners to look at, you know, how are they assessing their horse, and are they setting their horse up for long-term soundness, or is it like a quick fix for performance? Because that's something that I think is important for owners to consider, not just farriers and hoof care providers.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that in this day and age, oh gosh, there's social media is one of those double-edged sword situations, right? Like, we have information at our fingertips. There's almost no reason we can't be learning how to do better. And sometimes learning to do better means that we have to address the fact that what we were doing wasn't the most serving for the horse. And it's hard to lean into that uncomfortable space where we go, gosh, I don't know enough, but I know enough now to say what I was doing wasn't working and there's a better way.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, I would love to, you know, continue the conversation and maybe chat a bit more with you on some other stuff. So thank you so much for being willing to do this today. And sorry it was so like last minute and, you know, off the cuff, but I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good day.
You too. Bye. Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.